Yes, welcome back to Thursday show here on World Football Daily. We did promise you Mr. Christian Hennage, and that is exactly who we've got on the line right now. A fan favourite, according to Raf, here at World Football Daily. All I know is that I absolutely love chatting football with this guy. Contributor to ESPN and 442 and The Guardian as well. Christian, pleasure to have you back on the show, mate.
Absolute pleasure to be here.
Always good to hear your voice, mate, even if it is slightly northern, I have to say. Let's get straight into the Champions League from yesterday evening. Let's talk Bayern Munich against Arsenal, and let's talk the surprise that was the result. Nobody gave Arsenal a chance to go to the Allianz Arena and win, let alone get a 2-0 win.
Yeah, I think you have to preface, though, with the fact that Frank Ribéry and Bastian Schweinsteiger were missing there. You don't want to level that much importance on two players, but I think they make a significant difference. And as well, there was a certain, I felt, almost carelessness from Bayern last night. It seemed as if they knew that 3-0 was the kind of deficit that there was, 3-1 rather, was the kind of deficit that was never really going to be overcome, and that they could kind of get away with conceding two goals. And consequently, yeah, they did ride their luck a little bit, but I think if you can't hold out for 4, 5, 6 minutes in that late in a game, then you probably don't deserve to go through in the next round.
There's still been a fair bit of criticism of the way Arsenal played last night. It wasn't a convincing performance, and maybe they were helped by the fact that Bayern struggled to get out of second gear. What did you make of the way Wenger approached this match last night?
I did almost feel that given they'd scored within 3 minutes, I thought, okay, they're going to really go for this hell for leather kind of an affair, but they tepid at times and somewhat afraid to really commit themselves. And I understand that because Bayern, irrespective of the players we've discussed that were missing, are still a frightening prospect. They still have more than enough talent in there. But in a cup competition, I just feel as if you're only going to get one chance to do this. So why not, throw everything at the game and see what happens? Because either way, they were going out. So you might as well, again, this may be Kevin Keegan rubbing off on me here, but it'd be better to go out 3-0 than, as they eventually did, lose by just that one goal.
It's obviously better to get kind of battered and go for it. Were you surprised then that Ramsey was playing in this one and maybe he didn't stick with just kind of the one holding midfielder, maybe Mikel Arteta, and someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain or Jovinho didn't start this game?
Well, the problem with Jovinho is he's got all the composure of a bouncy ball. So it's not something that you really want him for this kind of situation. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain definitely could have provided something because he's a powerful physical character. The Ramsey situation is an interesting one. I'm debating personally if it's starting to look as if he isn't the kind of quality that they had hoped. And you could easily point that to the rather unfortunate leg break. You could attribute it to just that is life. Some players don't develop to the levels that you expect. But I think for him, it's becoming to the point where, and I could be wrong, Arsenal fans maybe are starting to question if it's worth persevering with him, because there's only so long you can hope to develop that talent like that when it's at a cost to the rest of the team. And I debate if loaning him out in the same way they did with Jack Wilshere would really benefit him a great deal. I think his issue seems to be that he just doesn't produce enough of those big game moments. Whereas at least with Wilshere, I think it's the Emirates Cup, there was a game against Rangers and one against Atletico Madrid where you just watch him and you thought, okay, this is friendly. You can see his brain is a few steps ahead of his opponents.
Bayern Munich, as I say, Christian, never really got out of first gear in this one. And Arjen Robben played an important role in this game last night, giving the ball away, wasting opportunities, though. With him without Ribéry, does he hinder this side a lot with his dare I say it, greediness and ability to hold on to the ball?
Arjen Robben would never admit that. I think we can both draw that conclusion that, he believes in himself more than enough. But I think, you can tell a lot by Arjen Robben by the shirt number he wears. And it's a theory I've long held that, number 10s by their design are mercurial characters, and there'll be some nights where they do things spectacularly and the win is kind of shouldered on their brilliance. But when things don't go as well, admittedly Bayern still went through, but the performance wasn't good enough, you tend to look at those players who were trying the more difficult things, who were trying to be slightly inventive and think outside the normal parameters. They're the ones that garner the most criticism. And I think you're completely right in saying not having Ribéry there does destroy that balance, because it makes him somewhat unsure as to what to do. And I think, having the kind of wingers that they do, players who do like to get the ball and do like to drive in with it, it's helpful to have two of them on both sides, so it's not obvious which side it's going to go to every time.
With Bayern being so slow out of the blocks and never really getting going, do you question at all the mentality and their approach to last night's game? Maybe that could be the kind of arrogance that we saw the German national team side have going into the Euros last summer.
Oh, of course. I think, you know, they'll be honest enough in their own evaluation of things to know that they did come quite close to going out. We've seen it happen before, because it's the kind of thing where it just took that one goal. And while it didn't come last night, they'll probably concede that they need to up their performance, and that against the bigger sides, I think Kupanka said he sees them as almost as good as Barcelona, whereas Muller is somewhat more modest in his belief that anyone who wants Barcelona in the next round is mad. And I would completely concur with Muller on that one. And I think that you have to be careful with developing arrogance, because you don't want to see complacency strip in. Bayern are a very good team, and I would argue they're definitely alongside, if not just underneath, Barcelona in terms of the favourites for this competition as we stand right now. But just because you're favourites doesn't mean you're into that final already. You still have to earn that right, and you still have to best the other teams that are in this competition, because as we've seen, you know, in competitions, not just the Champions League, but, you know, you go to the European Championships, teams like Greece in 2004, those were teams that were market outsiders yet got there because they stayed concentrated and they worked hard. And it's great having talent, but if you don't apply the effort and the concentration, then it's nothing other than a wasted opportunity.
You've got as well, going through last night, Malaga in this tournament now. How do you rank this Malaga side in terms of the final eight? It's a side that's pretty much paving the Cinderella story of the Champions League so far. We saw that with Apoel last year, and now with Malaga this year, the new boys who are flying, and with a great win over Porto last night.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Malaga. The unfortunate thing with them is that I don't think they'll be able to contribute next year, because they're obviously banned from the competition, which is a huge shame, because you're seeing a club that seemed like it was collapsing from the inside when its ownership group said that they weren't willing to put more money in, and that consequently they had to sell some of their best players, which is a huge shame. But it's one of those situations where, going back to that idea of the outsider, this is what Malaga are in this sense. And I think you could argue whichever team had gone through that night, Porto or Malaga, they were going to be the outsider. And I say that despite Porto's sort of good recent history in the competition of actually winning it with Mourinho. It would be wonderful to see Malaga do it, just because of what they represent. And I imagine there are some people frantically shouting that it's a disgrace that another club has come in and elevated its status through nothing more than splashing money. But again, you have to, in these instances, I think, look at the fans, the ones who've been there through the less than prevalent days, who've probably travelled to all corners of Spain watching them. This is a moment for them to embrace and celebrate. And so if you can form that dichotomy between the extravagant ownership and the hardy fans, then I think you can appreciate why it would be brilliant for them to get to the final.
What did you think of Porto's approach to last night's game? We saw a number of silly challenges, obviously three or four silly challenges in the end from Defour ended up leading to his sending off, the two yellow cards, of course, resulting in the red card and being removed from the field of play. But there was a lot of kind of niggly, nasty play from Porto. It didn't seem like they were trying to play that kind of expressive, beautiful football that we have seen them play at points this season.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, you've got to remember, Porto are 2 points off top at home, so things aren't really going too great. Prior to this, they've had a pretty hefty dominance on their domestic league, whereas at the minute it's Benfica who were kind of topping the charts. And I think it was surprising to see them lose such discipline. I mean, Stephen Defour is a player that, you know, I've long admired since he was at Standard Liège, but he's always had that slight issue with temperament. He's always looked a little bit bordering on the crazy, and it was a shame to see him go off as someone who does enjoy him as a player. But again, it's that idea of keeping your composure, and for a side like Porto with Lucho Gonzalez in there, someone who has a wealth of experience, you know, has won the French League, has won the Portuguese League, and has played for Argentina, I expected better. I think it's an instance where really you look for the more experienced players in the side to come forth and really kind of you know, just calm everybody down, just get them to appreciate what they're undertaking. And I think, you know, the fact that there was four yellow cards, if you include Defoe's first one, for the Porto side, showed what kind of issues they were having. It was a disappointment for them because I think they'll have thought that they should have gone through. No disrespect to Malaga, but they have a slightly better pedigree, and they rely on this money as well. It's part of what keeps them so, you know, well flourished in Europe. But it's one of those situations where they'll probably learn something from it at least, and they've been able to give some of the players that they'll look to sell a decent showpiece to impress potential suitors in previous games.
How do you want the draw to line up tomorrow, Kristen? Who are the pairings that you want to see pulled out of the Champions League pot for the quarterfinals and semifinals?
That's very difficult because the eternal optimist in me sees potential in all of them. I would prefer, I think, Bayern and Barca to come together just to see how that one pans out. I think, you know, that could be an incredibly fun tie to watch because, again, as I said, Jupp Heynckes thinks that this team is doing at its best, and why not put it on there? You could argue very easily that should be saved as the showpiece, but then the fan of the underdog in me would quite like to see Malaga get to that final, and I don't know if they're going to do it if they come up against Bayern or Barcelona. And then, of course, you've got the likes of PSG in there. Again, you could argue they're just like Malaga because they've risen themselves, but probably not on such a grander scale because of the fact that they do have a decent pedigree. But I think if you can get PSG and Juventus in there, Zlatan gets to return to Juventus, that's a nice little story arc to hinge things on. So it's one of those situations, like I said, you can kind of draw more than enough good conclusions to justify any of them. But I think if you can get those kind of ties, you're in for a good set of fixtures.
What about the Europa League this evening? Obviously, the big clash building into this round of ties was Inter Tottenham. That's seemingly been sealed up, though. Is there any way back for Stramaccioni and his Inter side?
I'd be very surprised. I think that first leg was a microcosm for Inter Milan. They are in crisis, essentially. They're just not doing well. And I think, you know, the fact that if you look at, I think it was 3 years ago when the Champions League game where Bale got his hat-trick. If you look at what's changed there, the day after that game, Inter Milan were linked with a £45 million bid for Gareth Bale. Now, I don't even think they'd get to talk to his representatives, which is a shame because, again, you could argue this is the Mourinho legacy, that he very much does pull everything up with him when he leaves and leaves nothing there to build on, and he's very short-termist in that sense. But he does get results, and he got the Champions League that Moratti wanted, that, you know, kind of added to the legacy of his father and so on. But it's still not good that they were beaten 3-0 by Tottenham, and that's no disrespect to Tottenham at all. I think Tottenham have been fantastic this season. They've been one of the most exciting teams to watch. But I think it's the fact it was 3-0. It's one of those scorelines where you think, that looks incredibly convincing, and it was a convincing performance. I didn't really see Inter do anything of note, and I don't think it was as simple as because Tottenham had the more physically adept players. I think there was a genuine trump in skill there from Tottenham a lot of the time. And I just think that Inter are trying to have this resurgence. They're buying somewhat younger players, Kuzmanovic, Mateo Kovacic, but they're also selling the likes of Felipe Coutinho and prior to that, Davide Santon. Two players I think really should have stayed there because, you know, they've got bright futures and you can't just write off players like that. I think someone like Coutinho, yes, shifting from that number 10 in Wesley Sneijder to a somewhat more robust number 8 in Freddie Guarin is a good idea, but I don't think that has to mean you cash in on Coutinho, even if it justifies the other two purchases, because, you know, for me, Coutinho could very easily become one of the best players in the Premier League. He's a man of... He's quite interesting in the sense that he's a man of supreme confidence, because there's this great story of when he first arrived at Inter for a training session before he could officially join. He nutmegged Marco Materazzi, and the physio came to him afterwards and said, look, you do that again and I'll buy you snacks for the rest of the week. And Coutinho tells this story and says, he offered me snacks. Materazzi said he'd put me in hospital if I did it again. And the thing is, though, he's also quite a humble chap. He's married, which is admittedly is no kind of guarantee for humility. But he said, I don't enjoy drinking. I don't enjoy nightclubs. he's just very a calm person. I think that's wonderful to see in someone so supremely talented.
And could be a very big asset indeed for Liverpool this season. Coutinho. Just finally, Chelsea taking on Steaua Bucharest tonight, Kristen. I mean, it didn't look like Chelsea wanted to be there last Thursday, the loss to Bucharest. Do you think they want to go through into the quarterfinals of this tournament? Do you think they really care about the Europa League at all?
I would hope so. I would like to think that winning a Champions League does not, you know, instantly devalue the Europa League in your eyes, because again, the Europa League in itself was the UEFA Cup prior and then the Fairs Cup going back to the 60s. So it has a large pedigree itself, and again, winning it further establishes yourself in Europe and gives you more of a gravitas as a club. You're completely right in saying that I think that they didn't seem as if they cared last week. And then to couple it, there was some really just poor instances of technique from certain players. And I think when things like that happen, you kind of have this feeling in your head that it's not going to be your night. They can't afford that this time. There is no excuse for them to get to go out at Stamford Bridge with themselves in the second leg. Their issue will be defending against that away goal, because obviously the away goal and currency is worth two, so you have to be very careful about throwing everything forward. I think that they will go through. Steaua are a very good side, there's no denying that. They themselves have real pedigree going back to the 70s and the 80s. But again, it's just a supreme, you know, gulf of quality that's in there. It's not to say that Steaua are bad, just that Chelsea are very good. And again, if Rafa Benitez wins 3-0, he'll probably still be slated. I think we can all safely say that, probably harshly, but it's true. And I think for him, he's essentially going through the motions till the end of the season. Whatever he can achieve will be brilliant. I think if there's any positive to draw, it's that the Europa League at Chelsea could very easily be what the Club World Cup was for him at Inter, something to you know, put on his resume, to kind of ingrain him in the tapestry of the club, but also something that will overshadow the less than savoury moments.
And we wonder where Rafa Benitez will be landing after his time at Chelsea finishes this season. Kristen, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. Always enjoy listening to you talk football and, of course, reading your articles wherever we can find them. There's so many places, mate. That's the trouble. It's just have to hop around so many places. Do focus on a couple, please. Just stay focused so we don't have to go hunting around for even more of your stuff.
I can't turn work down. We both know that.
That is true. But it's a pleasure to have you on, mate. And we look forward to getting you back on in the near future. Enjoy the football tonight, mate.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers. Kristen Hennage there, ESPN contributor, as well as The Guardian, as well as 442, as well, on a whole host of other websites and magazines around the globe. You can follow Kristen at K Hennage. That's K Hennage on Twitter. Capital K, capital HENEAGE. Kristen, a top man to have on the show talking European football with his wide berth footballing knowledge. We're going to get away from the show for just a second. When we come back, we'll be chatting about the Europa League tonight, about what happened in the Champions League yesterday evening, and of course, seeing if Raf has any more weird and peculiar stories about anything that goes on down at the HDC from yesterday evening. We'll be back in just a sec.